Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Gentle Parents Unite podcast. We're happy to be here with you for another week. And I am always glad to be collaborating and having a chat with my good friend and colleague, Sujai Johnson. Hello, Sujai. How are you today?
Hi, Vivek. I am wonderful. I am so excited today. I'm really excited today that we're here with our great friend and collaborator, Margie Zentz. It's so exciting to be able to talk with her again and be here together.
For sure. Margie is the peaceful parent whisperer, and we love her so much. She holds such a special place in our hearts. And Margie, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Vivek and Sujai. It is an honor and a joy to be talking with you.
Yeah, if you listened to season one or season two, you can hear that Margie was on with us every single episode. The three of us were always a team. And then Margie went on to do some different projects. And, the other day, Sujai and I were like, we miss Margie so much. We have to have her back on. So here we are. Very happy to be chatting with you, Margie.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I am I'm delighted, too, because I've been missing you guys as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And, I've learned so much from you over the years, and I really appreciate your wisdom and your kind, empathetic advice that you give to people on our Facebook groups. And one of the things that I think that has really, you helped me really put solidly into my consciousness was how to use the concepts of nonviolent communication created by Marshall Rosenberg in my life and my relationships and my parenting. And I know that's something that you have a deep understanding about. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that today.
I'm all in.
Excellent. Can you maybe start by giving us an overview of what nonviolent communication is?
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, it was conceived of and stumbled across by a wonderful man by the name of Marshall Rosenberg. His drive was to understand, and I'm quoting almost verbatim, what gets into people that causes them to hurt other people. And through some traumatic experiences that he had as a young person, he wondered, why are people so violent with each other? What gets into that? What gets into people? And he pursued psychotherapy, becoming a psychotherapist. And he found that that wasn't really answering the question for him. He discovered that there was something else going on. And through a mentor, he came to realize that one of the things that we humans can sometimes struggle with is communicating in a way. And when I say communicating, I mean the two-way street, not just expressing, but also listening. We struggle with communicating in a way that supports us doing the thing that we love to do most of all. And what is that thing? Well, that thing is making life wonderful for each other. It's a pretty simple thing.
Yeah.
But it's when we make life wonderful for each other, for ourselves and for the people around us, we do it with a giving heart. It's without an expectation for something in return, some compensation in return or some reward, or also without the desire to avoid some negative consequence.
Right.
It's giving for the sake of giving. It's making life wonderful for each other. And the way we communicate with each other tends to undermine that goal. So Yeah, so he came up with this beautiful approach to communicating that allows us to give and receive empathically from the heart. So that's kind of what nonviolent communication is. And there's the mechanics of it. The mechanics are that we endeavor to make observations without evaluation or judgment, which is more challenging than you might think it is.
Super challenging.
It certainly can be, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not going to say it's hard. I want to say it's challenging to...
Margie.
I beg your pardon?
I was just going to say maybe it can be challenging.
Yeah, it can be challenging. You're right. It's not necessarily challenging, but it certainly can be challenging because we are so invested in our experience,
it's such a beautiful description and like really in-depth description of nonviolent communication. And I was sitting here listening to you talk, and just your voice really makes life marvelous.
Sujai.
I was thinking about, you know, all the collaborating and work that we've done together over time, and how a lot of the work that you have done, it really influences my work and the work that I do and share. You know, your wisdom is so at the core of all of that. And then I got the opportunity to check your story there with the can, and I was like, oh, the Margie reflections here.
I love that you did that for me. Thank you.
I love the opportunity to reconnect with you, and like, you know, like I was saying, your work really influences my work in so many ways, and it's so beautiful to be here with you and discussing nonviolent communication, because it's such an amazing relational tool when we can lean into changing our communication style to being more open to the listening, hearing, and receiving, as well as paying attention to the way that we are putting our message across.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one of the things that that I certainly learned from diving into nonviolent communication is how our communications are colored by our training and our social conditioning. And for example, here's just one example. We often use the word feeling, like I feel X, Y, and Z, and then we don't say what the feeling is. We say a thought or a belief. You know, for example, I feel judged. That's not a feeling. That's a diagnosis or a suspicion. Right?
Indeed.
And the cool part about that is once you start to see it, you really can't unsee it. You know, I'm 63 years old, and I've been swimming in this ocean for a pretty long time, this ocean where we say things like I feel judged, or, you know, it's challenging. It can be challenging to hear myself and to witness, you know, to be my own witness. But it's very, very powerful. And It's quite beautiful. I think of it like learning a second language. You know, when you grow up, you speak the language that your parents speak. And as an adult, when you endeavor to take on a new language, a language of compassion, it's like you're learning a second language. So you give yourself grace and kind of love yourself through it as you stumble and try again. And but it's very powerful. It's a very powerful approach to life.
Question for you, Margie.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to somebody and my mind says to me, this person's judging you. And I want to say out loud, I'm feeling judged. So because I have some feelings that come up from feeling like I'm feeling judged. And so,
yeah.
Or I'm feeling like I'm being judged. So my question is, why wouldn't I say I'm feeling judged? Like, what's the downside of saying that? And then what would I say instead that's maybe more accurate and more helpful, and why?
What a gorgeous question. So,
thank you. And it's very, I can feel it in my bones, right? Because I get judged. I feel like I get judged a lot. No, see, this is why I need your help, because I don't know what to say. Perceive I'm getting judged a lot.
So yeah, it's a belief that you're having.
Yeah.
So you believe you're being judged, and that belief is generating a feeling. What could the actual feeling be? And that's something for you to ask yourself. You might be feeling sad. You might be feeling annoyed. Those are feelings.
Right.
You know, a feeling word, an actual feeling doesn't require that you call it a feeling, right? Mm. You could say, I'm feeling annoyed, or I'm annoyed, right?
Mm.
So sorting out what your belief is, so it's your story, right? My story is that person is judging me.
Right.
And how do I feel about this? I feel angry. I feel, you know, those are legitimate feelings. And so then you can say, I'm feeling angry because my need for unconditional acceptance isn't being met. Because what is judgment but conditional acceptance, right?
It's not saying that the person isn't judging me necessarily. I'm not saying that they're not judging me. I'm just reframing in a more accurate way.
That's
what's
right.
Happening.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. And what you're looking for is what need of yours isn't being met.
Uh-huh.
So the way I put it was, I'm feeling angry right now because, or I'm feeling sad or whatever it is that I assess myself to be feeling, because this need, and in this case, it would be my need for acceptance, unconditional acceptance, isn't being met. Yeah.
Right. That makes sense to me.
Oh, beautiful.
Maybe my need to be seen for who I am. Would that be?
Yeah, that would be acceptance.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, we all have universal needs.
Right.
Every one of us does,
right.
No matter how old or how young. And one of the huge power of nonviolent communication is checking out, is that what I said before, receiving empathically. So now let's say I see that I'm having a conversation with you, Vivek, and I'm getting the cold shoulder. I'm witnessing some behavior that tells me that we're not connected right now.
Right.
I can check in with you and find out what's going on for you. So I can say, I'm noticing that we don't seem to be connected right now. Are you feeling annoyed because your need for acceptance isn't being met? And I would base that on, you know, what our conversation had been. I'd be checking in with myself to see if perhaps I am coming across as judgmental. Could I be being perceived as judgmental? You know? And so I can ask that. And a person does not have to be literate in nonviolent communication to be part of this conversation. You know,
right.
I can do that translation for them.
Mm.
And then that person might say, yes, exactly. That's exactly what I'm feeling. You know, and then I can further make a request. What do you need from me right now? You know, and so this
like
is
like what you need from me right now to feel more accepted or more safe in the conversation.
Yes.
Like
yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. It could be that the person will say, I need space from you right now. Or I need you to stop talking.
Right.
Yeah. I happen to be one of those folks who talks a lot. So, surprised I don't hear that more often.
You have the most beautiful and wonderfully valuable insights. Everybody loves to hear you.
That's very kind. Thank you.
Honor.
Thank you. Yeah. So I don't know if we've mentioned this yet. I actually developed a little course in nonviolent communication. I originally developed it to give to parents because it's a wonderful tool for connected parenting. And sure enough, I got called to do it as part of a weekly conversation that I've been having with people in my community around racism, in fact.
Oh, that's amazing.
Isn't it? Yeah. And we talk every Tuesday night on Zoom, and and one of the things that we identified was that to help people come to terms with their own racism, it requires, I contend, that it requires being able to listen empathically. We all know, this is not a surprise, you cannot change anyone's mind. That's out of the question.
Right.
So, you know, when you're having a Thanksgiving dinner with, you know, your racist uncle, and he's spouting off a whole lot of stupid stuff, one of the tools that we can have is a way of listening empathically for the needs and feelings that are underneath the abhorrent behavior. And so I was talking about that, and then they asked if I could help them get more proficient at nonviolent communication. So I developed this course. It's 7 weeks, but it's only like a half hour each session. Right. And we go into the mechanics of it and the goals and all the concepts behind it. It's really fun. So I have offered to give it to the Becoming Gentle group as a weekly thing.
This is such an amazing opportunity. I'm certain that our subscribers and the folks in the Gentle Parents Unite support service are absolutely going to be really excited to get involved in this.
I'm excited too.
I'm looking forward to joining myself. I always love to learn more about nonviolent communication, and I'm also just really looking forward to the opportunity to get to reconnect and spend some more time collaborating with you.
I love that. Just in case one love wasn't going to do it.
No, absolutely love it.
Can you give us an overview of what the course is going to be, what the course contains?
Hey, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to, I should have probably taken this out already. Yeah. Okay. So on our first week, we just talk about like an overview of nonviolent communication, what it is and how it got to be. On the second week, we talk about observation without evaluation. And then on the third week, I call that feelings, nothing more than feelings.
Of course you do.
Yes, I do. And then the fourth week is all about taking responsibility for our own feelings. And then the fifth week is the gift of making requests. And actually, that's a two-parter. There's a part one, and then week six is a part two. And then week seven is receiving empathically. I'm talking about how we can listen for the needs and feelings. And then, and actually, we continued on after that with, you know, exercises and you know, we just would get together and practice.
Right.
So that's how that goes. And and I did another thing that was particularly surprisingly fun, and that is I made a slideshow presentation for each week. So it's got visual stuff. Which is
always, much better.
I'm so goofy. I don't know. I love doing stuff like that.
Well, I've seen one of your slideshow presentations before. I enjoyed it very much. You did that. Was it like something number of slides and something number of minutes talk?
I think so. Yes. That was, it's called, I can't remember what it was called. It's a funny word. Peachacucha or hoochie coochie or Yes, that was fun. That's right. It was like 30 slides or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was great. That was another thing I gave in the community.
Right.
Back in the day when you could actually be in a space with people.
Yeah, don't we look forward to that again?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So I just want to mention that Margie said she's going to be giving this course for the Becoming Gentle people. Now, if you don't know what it means is that Sujai and I host a paid membership parent support space called Becoming Gentle. And you can find it by going to gentleparentsunite.com/membership. And what we do in that space is that we have regular live coaching calls, group coaching calls, where everybody that's a member has a chance to come on the call. It's a Zoom call, and you get 10 or 15 minutes to ask a question and get some guidance. We also do a live class. Every Thursday, I do a live class. I talk on and on and on about a specific gentle parenting subject and go into really depth and detail about it, giving strategies and concepts. I do that every Thursday, and every Friday, we have a group meditation that we do together. And as well as that, we have a whole library of videos available to members only, a series of worksheets that Sujai has created to help us uncover our values and our principles and our priorities. And We have so many events that go on. And so if you'd like to join that and also to be able to experience this beautiful workshop course with Margie, you can check us out there.
Nice. I love that. I'm still part of that group.
Yes, you are.
And sometimes I will see something and I'll chime in.
Yes, I always appreciate it when you do.
I love doing it.
Yeah. So, Margie, I want to hear something about how listening empathically and taking responsibility for my feelings and focusing on the needs and feelings of other people, how can that help me as a parent with a 2-year-old that won't brush their teeth and a 10-year-old that's swearing at me and a 16-year-old mm-hmm. that's not coming home and not letting me know where they are and mm-hmm. that whole thing, right? So can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So, of course, let's talk about the child who won't brush their teeth.
Sure.
That seems to come up every now and again.
Definitely.
So, when a kid won't brush their teeth, there's something going on. They don't like it for whatever reason. It could be that they're feeling frustrated by their lack of autonomy. It could be that they're not grasping why it's important to brush teeth. So one of the things that receiving empathically can do, it can help us figure out what's going on for this kid. Why isn't this kid interested in brushing their teeth? And we can gut check, you know, we can check in with them, having a conversation that removes rightness and wrongness. This rightness and wrongness thing often gets in the way of connecting with, you know, with people. You should brush your teeth. That makes me right and makes you wrong. Mm. And so we look beyond that to learn what is going on for this kid. Could it be that when I'm putting pressure on my child to brush their teeth, my child is feeling a drop in connection between the two of us? Could that be it? And it's so predictable because it happens every time. Mm. And maybe, you know, I haven't found the right combination of things to make teeth brushing enjoyable. Instead, I'm just putting the screws to my kid. Got to brush your teeth. That last dentist appointment didn't go well. Got to brush your teeth. I believe I'm being judged by my dentist because I can't bring in a kid that has no cavities. You know, what all these things, these are all things that we can explore. So I think first I would explore my own feelings about this. What are my needs? What are my feelings? And then I would, knowing all of that, then I would look at my kid and see what's going on for them. And then I can have a conversation with them that to check in with them, to find out what are their needs. And if those needs aren't being met, what are those feelings? And then I can find out, how can we make this better?
Mm-hmm.
What can we do? Again, the nonviolent communication facilitates this conversation so that it's not about right and wrong. It's not about judgment. It's about finding out what's going on that isn't meeting my kid's need for XYZ. and then finding out how I can meet that need or how we can meet that need together. Mm. Same thing with the older child who won't come home when I need them to come home. What's interfering? How can I connect deeply and compassionately with this child so that I can learn what is interfering with their ability to help me meet my need? You know, one of the things that I have learned is that without connection, we have a competition of meeting needs, you see.
I could not agree more with that.
Yeah.
That's a very profound way of putting it, you know. The connection allows us to meet in the middle and collaborate and have the shared need. And without that, we will very much tend to clash in our needs and getting the ways we're going about getting our needs met.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, without connection, I care about my needs and my feelings, and my partner, whomever I'm speaking with, whether it's my child or my neighbor or my lover or spouse, they don't care about my feelings and needs. They care about their feelings and needs. It's a competition, you know, and it's a zero-sum game. And nonviolent communication is a bridge to connection so that I care about my kids' needs and feelings and they care about my needs and feelings, because both of those things are very important. And nonviolent communication creates a bridge for collaboration so that you know, I don't think anything feels quite as good as hearing someone say, "What are your needs? How can I help you meet your needs?" You know, that's pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 So, and one might say, "Well, communication is pretty tricky with little kids." And yeah, of course it is. And we can also use nonviolent communication to help our kids feel that feeling of peace that comes with knowing that this person understands me.
Right. And I think it's important to remember, you know, it can feel difficult when we're communicating with really little kids and it can feel like they're not really understanding. But when we are interacting and communicating with small children and people who are pre-verbal or non-verbal, they're definitely retaining a lot of that, and they can feel the energy behind the way that we're speaking and the other forms of communication that we can use, the nonverbal communication forms that we share when we're communicating as well. Yeah. But also, you know, pre-verbal children, they're learning these skills from us as we're talking, and they may not seem to like completely grasp it at the moment. But it's all part of that growth process. And so we continue to communicate very clearly and directly as we would with anybody, and it helps to build those language skills.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. And it's, isn't it amazing to you know, put in this concerted effort to communicate mindfully and to speak in ways that build connection rather than erode connection, only to hear a child speak that way, you know, like to hear a child, you know, speak that way just like off the cuff, or, you know, with a friend, or or with a sibling to like have that language. You're like, oh my God, this kid is speaking this as a first language.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, when my kiddo got her first retail job, mm-hmm. she was constantly getting customers calling back to the store afterwards saying, I was served by this young woman and she was so amazing. She made me feel so good about myself and so good about shopping there. I just had to call and say that. And she would tell us these stories that happen all the time. And I said, well, what are you doing? She goes, well, I'm listening to them and I'm giving them empathy for whatever they're saying. And I really, and sometimes she would say, I really listen. Sometimes she'd say, I really act like I'm listening. And because it's retail, you know?
Yeah.
And she said, but just like she said, would say just a little bit of reflecting to them what they're saying and actually listening to them. It's amazing how people respond. Like she lived that way her whole life, pretty much receiving that. And we all interacted that way. It was her natural practice. And so when she goes out into the world and actually has that experience with people, they respond so dramatically. And it's not like with her, it's not with me. When I do it, I'm thinking, okay, now I'm going to empathize.
Right.
And now I'm going to listen empathically. But when she does it, she's just doing it, you know? And I love that about her, and I feel it in my interactions with her. And so it's so natural for her. And I think this is one of the things about, like you said, Sujai, the kids are learning from experiencing it with us, mm-hmm. is that it really becomes their paradigm. It becomes the lens that they look at the world through. And we have such an impact as parents and primary caregivers. We have such an impact on the lens that gets formed. The lens is getting formed no matter what. And our impact is there no matter what. So we might as well use that phenomenon of the lens being created through our interaction, or at least deeply influenced through our interaction. We might as well use it consciously to work within our values and the things that we really care about, so that they can have this kind of thing happen, you know? Because those repeated experiences, they build the layers, you know, and there's no, that's what SMABO is all about, right? SMABO is small moments affect big ones. It's one of my favorite acronyms.
I love that one.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And I think a nonviolent communication, SMABO, is a big one. That it's not only like major conflicts that we have to tune into, to needs and feelings and to listen beyond the surface and to receive things to observe non-judgmentally without right. evaluating.
Without evaluation, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we can do that in small moments as well as the big moments. And it really helps to form that, those natural communication patterns, those natural interaction patterns.
Yeah, absolutely. And it builds on our own quality of life too, you know, just our, the connection with ourselves, you know, in this very deep way where I can begin to observe myself without judging, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a novice at that.
Oh goodness, that's the hardest one to learn, right?
It can be.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, what a joy.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about, you know, you started by talking about Marshall saying that one of the most uplifting things we can do is to think about how we can make each other's lives more wonderful. And when we interviewed my kid for a podcast a couple of seasons ago, and what we did was we asked our community questions, say, do you have any questions for somebody who's been raised in a gentle parenting mindset from the very beginning? And one of the questions was, what's your purpose in life? What are your goals in life? And she said, my goal in life is to be happy. And then Sujai said to her, well, you know, Veets, I dig that, but you know, some people might say that that's a selfish goal. And how would you respond to that? She said, well, what I've learned through my life is that one of the best ways I can be happy is by making other people happy. And so this is what I focus on, and it's really true. It really is how my life operates. And I just thought that was so such a wonderful answer for her to give. She said it's completely selfish. Oh, she was like being very clear. It's completely selfish. I do it because it makes me happy. But it just so happens to be that when I contribute to someone else's happiness, I end up being more happy. And I think it's the same thing with, you know, like, because like when I hear you say, listen without evaluating a judgment, like something in me tightens up. I'm like, I don't want to do that. I want to judge. Like, how else am I going to feel safe and righteous if I don't, you know?
Oh, I have good news for you.
Tell me.
There is a place for judgment.
Oh, okay. Tell me about that, please.
I'm so happy that you mentioned that. Here's where judgment is so beautiful. Mm. We judge whether our needs are getting met or not.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, hang on to that judgment. You need it. Mm. Yeah. And look, humans judge.
Right.
Right? Birds fly, fish swim, humans judge. That's what we do.
To give judgment a fair shake, it can indeed, you know, using our better judgment is part of the skill of deciding what fits into our value system and what doesn't, and like what we're comfortable with and what we're not comfortable
exactly.
with. So certainly judgment has a place in helping to keep us safe and comfortable and within our own, you know, comfort zones of life. We are constantly judging whether, you know, something is acceptable or comfortable or whether it tastes good or bad.
And, exactly.
It's not inherently a bad thing to have a judgment.
Right. Right. Where judgment stops serving us is when we mix it up with with our observations of what I'm doing or what other people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
I agree.
How does that become damaging? How does that work against us?
Well, when I make an observation and it's mixed up with a judgment, it puts people on their back foot. They stop listening. They start defending. So it interferes with communication. Yeah, it's pretty simple that way.
And then that interferes with us getting our needs met in the relationship too.
Absolutely. And because what do you do when you're feeling attacked? You either withdraw or attack back. So when I mix my observations up with evaluation, then that other person is going to attack me back. And then things either escalate or just fall apart. So that's why I like the idea of figuring out how to make an observation without mixing it up with evaluation.
Seems like keeping my eye on the goal is a big one here, you know?
Yeah.
My eye on the goal of getting my emotional relational needs met and engaging in the relationship in a way that's going to be like really mutually beneficial. I get emotional, yeah. I can lose sight of that pretty easily.
So nonviolent communication works best when we're clear about our goals, why we're doing this thing. Without that, without the goal, it becomes very mechanical. Because in the beginning, it can be a little awkward to speak in this different way. And it can be kind of mechanical, and somebody on the receiving end of that may say something like, "Will you quit your psychobabble?" You know, and may, you know, it may get weird. Or one of the other things about nonviolent communication is that a lot of people use it because they want to get someone else to do something.
Right.
And that is not the goal of nonviolent communication. So Marshall Rosenberg tells this really great story of this woman who participated in a workshop and then went home and had a nonviolent communication conversation with her son, who then, you know, blew her off and didn't do the thing she asked him to do. So she came back the next day and she said, it didn't work.
Didn't work.
She was miffed. So he said, well, tell me what happened. So she described what she did. She described how she communicated, and he listened and he said, well, you know, it sounds like the mechanics are all there. So what's up? And she said, well, he didn't do it. He didn't do what I asked him to do. And so he said, ah, I see. So your goal was to get him to do what you wanted him to do, but that's not the goal of nonviolent communication. So she said, so I'm just supposed to let him do whatever he wants and be permissive? And he said, well, no, that's not the goal either. The goal is to connect empathically. That's the goal. To give and receive empathically. Now, so I'll take that a step further. If I have a beautiful conversation with my child and he still blows me off, then that tells me that I don't understand everything there is to know about this particular interaction. I need to dig more. I need to find out what's interfering. And that's my goal, is to find out what need is not getting met here. Right. What mutual need isn't getting met here. My work isn't done. So I love that. That was so illuminating to hear.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think one of the things that I love about nonviolent communication is the distinction between wanting a need to be met and the strategy for meeting the need.
Right.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like this mother in your story clearly had a need that she wanted met. It sounds like she was attached to one particular strategy for getting that need met. And because her kid didn't meet the need in that particular way, she felt like it didn't work.
Right.
Rather than engage in a conversation with her kid about, well, maybe there are other ways that my need can be met that also meets your need that clearly isn't being met by the strategy that I'm suggesting.
Exactly. And we can't really learn these things without connecting and having an empathic conversation.
Yeah.
And it's like incredibly important to remember that any time we engage in relational tools and all of this work that we're doing, anytime we engage with that with the intention of having a specific outcome, then it's really important to check back in with ourselves and exactly what the goals are around this thing. Because when we have a mindset on a specific outcome, then we're not taking the time to really listen and hear and see the needs of the other person and to really collaborate. And then when we get into that space, then, you know, our actions and the way that we're carrying ourselves and the way that we're engaging in things becomes rather manipulative. And so it's really important to hold ourselves accountable for that and realize that, you know, everything is part of a growth process. And when we enter into this stuff with the exact intentions of a specific outcome, it's good to take a step back and reevaluate exactly, you know, what and why and how, and like really hold space to see the other person and realize that we may not be coming from a completely organic or, you know, empathetic place.
Right. That's a powerful point. Yeah, and I love that you said that about coming off as manipulative, because that's a very possible outcome of this communication style if those clear goals aren't understood. So that's a good one.
This conversation has been so amazing. I really look forward to partaking in this course with you and learning more about nonviolent communication. Something that I've been dabbling in for a long time and would really love to go a little bit deeper.
Oh, yay. Well, I'm excited. I'm really excited to be giving it. It's fun. There's lots of laughs.
There's always lots of laughs with you, Margie.
Well, I hope so.
Yes. You make the world more marvelous.
That's very kind of you to say, especially coming from one who is also does that. You make the world a much more wonderful place. And so do you, Vivek.
Well, thank you, Margie.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah, we certainly do our best.
Yeah.
And this conversation I think has been really great because I think what we can take away from it is to really watch our mindset as we engage with our kids and engage with in our other relationships. Are we coming at it from a place of judgment and like inappropriate judgment, judging the other person, just evaluating what they're doing rather than looking for the deeper needs, our needs and the other person's needs, equally important, and how we can engage in the conversation in such a way that we're, and the interaction in such a way that we're really working, not just to meet the needs, but to have everybody feel like we're working towards meeting the needs. Cause I think that's one of the things that, that really helps people is if they feel like we're working towards that real need meeting, collaborative, mutual experience. And then people are willing to work towards that if they really feel that sense of mutuality and effort. And I think in the parent-child relationship, caregiver-child relationship, to a large degree, that responsibility falls on us to lead that and to model that. And I think it's one of the reasons that it's wonderful to have this awareness of these kind of different strategies and these different ways of looking at things, so that we can really think on them and start to practice them and bring them into our interactions. And then our kids start to feel, oh, wait a minute, this is not somebody that's an obstacle to me getting my needs met. Because so often that's how kids feel, like we're their obstacles, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then it's so hard for them to open up and listen and trust and engage in collaboration. And if they feel instead that we're their partners in getting their needs met, it automatically opens them up to wanting to meet our needs too. And this is what you said before too, that when people feel like we're engaged in trying to help them have, or in trying to, I guess, engaged in help them. I don't know if help is the right word. Work towards creating a situation where their lives are more wonderful.
Yeah,
make their lives more wonderful.
That's it.
Yeah. Then there's a natural human impulse in us to want to do that in return. And I think this is one of the beautiful things about humanity. That we have that impulse, you know, and we can certainly work with it or work against it. And I know when I'll expose myself here. When I'm online and I'm arguing with people on political posts and stuff, I often don't go in that direction. Mm-hmm. I get aggressive and I'm not meeting the needs, and I want to piss them off or whatever. but it plays out perfectly. It plays out with them getting defensive and attacking me back, and then there's disconnection, and then we just end up blocking each other. And it's like pretty consistent when I operate from that mindset. I can see the example very, very clearly. And for sure, what I've done is, if there's any non-loving attitude that I'm thinking that maybe I want to change in that person, I've certainly helped them entrench it rather than evaluate it and shift it. And largely because, of course, I'm in many ways operating from the same mindset. And so I can definitely see when I operate that way and when I operate the other way, and I really focus and tune in, and requires, for me, like I said before, it requires a lot of self-awareness and consciousness for me to do it, because it's not how I was raised. And so it's a skill that I'm learning decades, but still learning and having to engage in consciously. But when I do operate from that mindset, things are so different. And I really think that, you know, this was a great conversation, because it could really help parents take that mindset and take that, those practices, and really bring them into their lives with their families.
I have an ulterior motive.
Tell me.
All right. So I have a kid.
Yeah.
And he's a young man. He's 26 years old now. And, I am not going to be around forever.
Right.
That's just a fact.
True.
And this guy is in this world living with all the other humans who are alive at this time. And I want them to be cool. I want them to be wonderful.
Yeah.
And so my ulterior motive, and this is why I got into doing this this peaceful parenting whisperer thing from the get-go. My ulterior motive was to somehow see if I couldn't help people raise people who would be wonderful in the world.
Right.
There, I said it.
Yeah.
So that my kid would have someone to hang around with. And of course, it's probably a pipe dream, but you know,
you shift so many perspectives and help so many people lead more peaceful and content lives.
Well, thank you.
And I happen to know that firsthand. I may even be one of those people.
Yeah, those ripples. Those ripples go out there, you know?
They do. We don't know where they go. Yeah. They just go and go and go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to remind myself that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Margie, my dear, I would love for you to share with our listeners where they can find you and your work and whatever projects that you're excited about right now that you're doing. Yeah, what would you like to tell people?
Thank you. So I am I do have a website, and you can find me at this website. It's a cumbersome name. It's called peacefulparentwhisperer.com. Just those three words, peacefulparentwhisperer.com. And that's my little home on the internet, and I do have this course called Making the Shift to Peaceful Parenting that's more generalized, and not really offering it right now except to individuals who want to take it. So mostly because I'm not interested in doing a big hustle, you know?
Right.
So if anybody is interested in that, they can look at it and read about it. It's on the website. And
that was the softest sell that I've ever heard. That was a very soft sell. I like it.
It's about as abrasive as I'm ever going to get.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm also a musician. And I do a weekly live stream when I'm feeling healthy, which I hope to be next week. And you can find me on the web at my name, which is Margie, M-A-R-J-I, Zintz, which is Z as in zebra, I-N-T-Z dot U-S as in us, MargieZintz.us, and that's my music site. And if you're on Facebook and you want to send me a friend request, then you might be able to see me play on when I busk on Facebook, which is where I do my weekly things, or on YouTube. That's all I know.
Wonderful, wonderful. And the music that you're about to hear, that you heard at the beginning and that you're about to hear now as we sign out, is also you composed it and are playing it. So it's really wonderful. And the name of that song is Joyful, and really truly is joyful. And I think that that adjective describes you very well, and also what you inspire in other people very as much. Margie, I certainly feel so.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. This has been a true joy for me, reconnecting with the two of you. I adore you so much, and love talking to you.
That is absolutely how I feel as well, Margie. Thank you so much for being here today and sharing with us about the nonviolent communication.
It's a pleasure.
Wonderful. Okay, folks, so if you'd like to get in touch with Sujai and I as well, you can check us out at our big Facebook group, which is called Gentle Parents Unite, that Sujai started 7 years ago or so, and now we have over 70,000 members. And we have an amazing admin team that shares this philosophy, and you can ask questions and they respond, and it's a really beautiful community. We also have, as I mentioned before, we also have our membership space at gentleparentsunite.com/membership, where we do a whole bunch of live events, and you can get a lot of really intimate and really helpful personal parent coaching. And we also, in my social media, you can find me at Meaningful Ideas on Facebook, where I have a couple of hundred articles on gentle parenting that I've written, as well as a whole bunch of videos. My YouTube channel is Meaningful Ideas, where I have at this moment over 60 parenting videos, and I have another 30 in the can that I still have to edit and post. And so it's like a never-ending stream. And my blog, which is the website's still very much under construction, but there's about 300 articles there as well. So it's like a never-ending stream of really helpful resources for you to help you deepen your parenting practice. And we love you very much, and we're here to support you. We would love for you to share this. Yes.
I hate to interrupt, but what is the name of that website?
Oh, thank you. Meaningfulideas.com. I say meaningful ideas so often, I just assume. And that was a perfect interruption. Perfect interruption. And we love you very much, and we're here for you, and we will see you next week.